life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. Dynamite Brian Smith here on episode 70 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. It is December the 1st, 2012, and joining me today is Grace Chan.
Yay! Clap for me. Hello.
Good to see you again, Grace. It's another cat-themed episode we've got you on. After your cats on The Cat Returns last time. We're going to be talking about Azumanga Daioh today.
Yay, Azumanga Daioh.
But first of all, I would say you were supposed to be on our Hard Men and Women of Anime.
I was.
But you were up a mountain.
I was up a mountain, and then I couldn't run down the mountain fast enough and basically get home in time. That's actually what happened. True story. Actually, a friend invited me to go up a mountain for a wee jaunt, which sounded delightful, so then I accepted. And then I got to the bottom of the mountain and realized it's the second highest mountain in Korea, and it takes 4 hours to go up and down. And I was like, oh, you probably should have told me that first. As I have to be home in 8 hours, and you say that it takes 8 hours just to get up and down. So we ran up the mountain and ran down the mountain and still couldn't make it back in time.
But did you have
fun? So sorry.
Did you have fun?
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. We were higher than the clouds even. It was very, very high. But we were exhausted by the time we got to the top and felt like Rocky after climbing all the stairs and like, we're the champions, and sweaty and stuff. And then we got to the top and we found all these children playing. It's like, okay, maybe we suck.
And then you got to go all the way back down again.
And then run down the mountain. Yes. But I'm here today.
For the record, your hard men were the Major from Ghost in the Shell, which I think she did get. Oh, no, we got Batow was mentioned, not the Major.
She's a hard lady.
She is.
But he's a hard man.
That's true, but he does look like he's got bottle tops on his eyes.
That's how hard he is. He can get away with that kind of thing and nobody calls him out on it. He's a criminal for the fashion police, and yet he still gets away with it. But yeah, he's a badass. He destroys people in Ghost in the Shell 2 when he goes into that fight scene where he just clears out the room with all kinds of badassness. That's pretty much the definition.
I've still not seen that one.
Oh my god, you have to watch it. It's so awesome. It's very head effy. Plays with your brain, but it's very good.
You also had Kenshiro from Fist of the North Star.
Well, he's another definition of badass with emphasis on bad and ass from asshole, but yeah, it's grunting. Classic grunting anime. I'm a badass and haha, you don't know, you're already dead.
You also went double on Jin and Mugen from Samurai Champloo.
You had to have some attractive badasses, so to each their own, you have a choice of Jin or Mugen.
Your choice, I remember, used to be Jin. Have you sort of mellowed to liking both of them now?
No, I prefer Jin. It's a man with glasses and a ponytail. What's not to like? And a sword. So there you go.
Asuka from Evangelion.
She's a badass. I can't remember the episode. When she's fighting the angel with the paper arms, and she knows she's going to lose, and the angel chops off her arms, and she still charges at the alien or at the angel until it chops off her head. That's pretty badass. Also, the end of Evangelion in that fight scene. That's a ridiculously awesome fight scene. So she's badass.
And last one on your list was Manji from Blade of the Immortal.
He is the ultimate badass because, well, he's cheating slightly because he is immortal. But, you know, he is an ultimate badass. His fight scenes are amazing. He doesn't really, you know, he's not a sensitive man. He's like an old school manly man that just cuts people in half and does his lone warrior way. Well, as much as he can do.
Was that, are you taking that from the comic or from the anime? Because I can't remember.
Uh, from the comic, the anime, I detested. I saw the first episode and said, no. Yeah, manga only. You must read the manga.
Yeah, I've not read the manga, but I have seen, I knew that the TV show was much worse than the comic was.
Infinitely worse. You must read. I mean, I actually invested in physically buying with physical money. Do you know how much that costs? There's so many of them, and they're like the bigger graphic novels too, but totally worth the investment.
Hey, I'm a One Piece fan. I know all about buying ridiculous amounts of comics. That's a tiny amount of comics for Blade of the Immortal.
Well, that's just insanity. I'm sorry. One Piece, oh my god.
It's on 65th too volume.
Do you have like two bookshelves just for
I'm missing some of the middle volumes, but yeah, I shall need to invest. I've run out of bookshelf space again, and I bought a new bookshelf this year, so. And I've actually run out of space to put bookshelves as well, so.
I'm you in can trouble. Have a One Piece wall just of manga for ceiling. That'd be pretty cool.
Well, you know, Ivan's got a bookcase which is just full of One Piece. Oh, and Hello Kitty merchandise, but that's pretty much it.
A nice mix of male and female. Yes. Hello One Piece.
He's even got that Hello Kitty toaster, the one which turns Hello Kitty's face onto the toast. Right, onto our regular features. Our first one is the UK anime releases, which I'm not sure this will be much interest to you, being a number of continents away. First up is Tales of Vesperia First Strike, something I've never heard of until I looked it up for this list, which is apparently...
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's a film based on the Tales series of games, which I've heard of, but I've never played one. Have you ever played a Tales game?
No, I haven't played, unless it's like Sonic and Tails, in which, no, I still haven't played.
That's just where my brain was going as well, but no, it's T-A-L-E-S. I think they're a bunch of fantasy role-playing games or something.
Okay.
So I should be giving that one a miss. Then there's Clannad After Story Part 2, which is based on the visual novel of the same name, rather than the Irish band. Which is the joke I make every time.
I was interested, but now that they're not the Irish band, I don't know if I'll be watching that.
It's yeah, it's visual novel stuff with horrible character designs. And then finally, there's Phantom Requiem complete series from the director of the Blade of the Immortal anime.
Really? Yeah. I guess I'll be missing that based on notoriety, I guess.
Yeah, he also did Noir and loads of the other B-Train. It's Koichi Mishimo is the guy.
Well, how dare he? I'll never watch any of his things again. He ruined Blade of the Immortal. What an a-hole. Can you curse on here?
Yeah, Phil 3. We used to have a no-cursing rule, but that generally went out the window. Mainly due to me.
Yeah.
I'd make people stop cursing, and then I'd say something absolutely appalling.
Nice.
Yeah, I think I'm the only person who's used the C word on this podcast. It was to describe.
Oh, really?
It was to describe the presenters of Top Gear, so I think I'm allowed.
Well, fair enough.
On to our second regular feature, which is What You Watch. So, Grace, what have you been watching?
What have I been watching?
Or anything, TV, movies, boy band concerts? You said leadingly.
Well, I'm embarrassed to say that I'm completely obsessed with K-pop nowadays. I went from being somewhat pretending to be cool, being into Nine Inch Nails and stuff, but now I'm totally into makeup and sparkly clothes wearing boy bands that sing ballads and dance a lot. And then I went to a concert last weekend and watched them sweat for 3.5 hours. It was amazing.
So do you get loads of merchandise while you're there, or you just go for the concert and the glow sticks?
I did. I ran out of the concert early because I had to get a bus home. And while no one was looking, I bought a calendar with pictures of this boy band and a flag banner. So then I can put it over my bed and imagine that they're actually there when they're obviously not.
Good. I was interested because I've been watching an anime called Polar Bear Cafe. And they did a... episode where one of the main characters, Panda, his mum's called Panda Mama, and her friend Mrs. Red Squirrel, they went to see a boy band, and it was having seen the footage you had on your Epic Life video, of you at the concert, sort of the glow sticks
in, yes.
Far off in a huge stadium. It looked just like the cartoon of when they went to see their boy band. Their boy band, however, was made up of porcupines.
Korean music pop concerts, K-pop concerts are kind of unreal. Like that one, that footage, the one that I had footage from, it was like a cross between a baseball game and a music concert and a kind of strip show. Because at one stage, this guy came out and pretended to sing and dance and just really went, look at my abs in the rain and I'm handcuffed for some reason also. So all the ladies would swoon. It was weird. They're all very estrogen-y and crazy. It's very not a safe place for a man, basically.
But you had a good time.
I had an amazing time.
Right, <yeah. laughs>
I got in touch with my ovaries.
Good, good. Well, probably the best way to do it, rather than physically.
Emotionally in touch with my ovaries.
Yes. on my watch you watch front, unless you've got anything else you want to tell people about that they should check out?
Probably not. I would love to know what you're watching. So.
Right. I've not been watching much, but I'll give you a rundown. It's just sort of stuff I've been watching on the regular. I've been getting a bunch of 1994 stuff because I've signed up to do the Golden Blog Anniversary. I can't remember what they're calling it. But basically, a bunch of anime bloggers have decided, well, have been corralled into producing a essay for each year since Astro Boy was on TV about TV anime. So I picked 1994 because that's one of the 3 years where not much happened. It's remarkable. There's like 3 years where nothing really of note came about, and that's one of them. So I've been looking at a bit of Macross 7, a bit of G Gundam initially, and I've got a few more to check out. Hold on, my virus database is joining another podcast. Then what else have I been doing? Let me just have a quick check down here. I've got something called Scamper the Penguin to watch, which I've not watched yet because I'm going to be doing the history of anime penguins at Iacon next year as a panel.
Sounds like a dissertation topic.
I've put it as various blog posts before, but I'm going to take it live and direct to the public.
Nice.
I've been watching. They do. And people get very excited about the penguins. They love them. I've been watching Kamen Rider Wizard. That's slowly picking up speed into sort of getting into what it's all about. In that the Kamen Rider's got a new power up. Parks and Recreation on its fifth series, which I'm loving that. Ever watch Parks and Rec?
No, I'm actually trying to write some of these down so I can actually have something good to watch.
I'd avoid watching the first series. The first series isn't very good. It sort of finds itself in series two. 30 Rock series 7, which is the final one, thank God.
I used to love it, and then I don't know what happened. Broke my heart.
The characters all stopped being human beings, I think, is the problem. And it's like
they just stop being funny, which is the problem.
They're trying to like make you invest in Liz for this final series. In this latest episode that I watched, they sort of give, she's got to pick between her job and having a kid because she realised she can't do both. And it's like, well, I'd feel more for them if every single character wasn't a ridiculous caricature at this point.
I don't know. It was such genius for like a couple of series. And then just one series, it just started off as like, what the hell happened here? I don't know. I think it was series 5 or 6 or something. It just straight off a cliff.
I'll give you some other things if you're interested in watching fun stuff. Polar Bear Cafe, I'm up to date on that. That's great. If you want to see a bunch of animals behaving like human beings. It's not aimed at kids. It's from a Jose manga, so it's aimed at women.
Cool. I'm a woman.
You're a woman.
I'll probably like this.
There's a red squirrel. Yeah, it's... The reason I like it so much is it's really well observed and sort of a lot of it's mainly observing male behaviour, particularly male pride in various forms. But they do some good stuff. They sort of introduce more female characters as it goes along, and there's definitely well-observed stuff. Particularly the when there's this sort of 18-year-old kid who wants to become an apprentice for the coffee-grinding tree kangaroo, and he has to work with a load of middle-aged red squirrels, and they're always teasing him. And that just rings extremely true to when I was younger and worked in factories surrounded by middle-aged women. The only way it could be more realistic is if at some point they do a Secret Santa and they buy him some sort of appalling sex toy as a joke. Not that happened to me, but it happened to people I worked with.
Oh, yes, clarification. some appalling animal sex toy. I would like to see the design of that.
Let me go through what I've been. I nabbed, because I am not made of money, so I nabbed the Giant Robo Blu-ray rips rather than spending the ridiculous amount of money it would cost to import them from Japan.
Surely that goes without saying.
Yeah, I would have bought them if they were even like half the. If they were just unreasonable as opposed to appallingly unreasonable, I might have actually bought them. But yeah, there you go. I think that's it, really. There's not much really going on TV at the moment that I'm watching. Oh, and Puyo Puyo, but you might not like that because it's about cats.
I am actually not a cat fan, even though I'm on these two episodes. Famous for cats.
And your live journal avatar is a cat.
My live journal, yeah, that's true. I have to change that from about 12 years ago.
Yeah, your bio is a little off. I haven't said mine would be as well. I'll just switch live journal off at this point.
It's, really?
I think the only two people I get updates from is you and Nert, who takes loads of the cosplay photos at the UK cons, and his posts are only linking to where he's put his cosplay photos up. So of all the people I knew who use live journal, those are the two remaining people.
I'll still keep going forever until I'm 80, and I'll have this whole, I don't know, book, basically.
I'm sure they must do some service where you can get the live printed off as a book. Because they know that you can do it for Twitter. You can get a Twirnal.
What?
This is what I heard about on Doug Loves Movies podcast. The comedian Jen Kirkman was giving away, as the prize of the contest, a Twirnal of her tweets. So apparently,
I can't imagine the content of most Twirnals would be worth a book. It's like, I got a pimple on my forehead, what to do? Page 2.
I wonder how it cost. I think it like cost $30 or something, she was saying. Twirnal, jeez. Make a book of your tweets. Twitter journal. Here we go. This is, you get no. give it to somebody as a Christmas present.
I can't express verbally why, but for some reason that just makes me feel very sad and depressed.
The word twirnal's appalling to begin with. Here we go. You can have a, if you want it comes in four different varieties. You can have a parakeet, which is less than 800 tweets, a dove, which is 800 to 1600 tweets, falcon, 1600 to 2400, or an ostrich, 2400. And the ostrich is the most expensive at $30 standard. Or you can have it deluxe with colour cover and colour photos for $135.
It prints off all your photos too.
I think, if you pick the more expensive version. Oh no, the pictures are in black and white as well on the black and white version.
I don't know. You could just go on Twitter and look at your old tweets. Do you really need a book? If you're obsessed with Twitter, surely you have a handheld device to look at your old tweets anyway.
Yes, that is true. That is true. I mean, I don't, and I still manage to do it through my old crappy, ordinary cell phone.
But you can just imagine some extremely vain people, and you go to their house, and they're like, oh, look at this fantastic coffee table book about all of my tweets. How about we have a little read, say?
I think the idea of giving it as a Christmas present is the most egomaniacal you could possibly.
Oh my god. Listen to the bullshit that comes out of my head.
Right, let's move on to our main topic of the night, or of the morning for me. And that is Azumanga Daioh.
2002
anime series based on the manga by, I should have practiced this before I read it, Kiyohiko Azuma.
Sounds good to me.
That sounds, yeah, about right. And so first off, when did you first see this, Grace?
I don't know. I'm guessing about 2003, 2004, sometime when I was in college anyway, studying animation. And generally what I would do is just download everything and then have it running in the background while I'm doing college work. And I have a feeling this is one of those series, but I do remember actually enjoying this as opposed to most.
Yeah, because I remember one thing you made us watch when we went, me and Ivan went round to yours in 2005. What was it called? Battle Programmer Shirace, which you were you were telling us was really cute, and then we were going, "This is really creepy."
The animation was really good.
About some paedophile computer programmer,
and he was her uncle apparently.
I can't. I tried. That's to... like... I've used
a relative paedophile. I don't know. Is there a word for that?
I don't know. Incestuous paedophile? I don't know. There's
there
a
you go.
Yes. Yeah, so, more on paedophiles later. Because there's one who has a paedophile as well.
You should have a paedophile episode. That would be really good.
I first saw it at Iacon 2002. It was a pick of the committee, and despite that I still went and watched some episodes of it because I don't know, there's nothing really more to put me off watching an anime than seeing some overweight older guys with mustaches telling me to watch a cartoon about schoolgirls. Of course, I am one of those overweight guys with mustaches.
How the tables have turned.
I've definitely avoided ever being on a committee, so yes, I watched it then, and then I think once I'd got high-speed internet of 512 megabyte downloads, as it was, that was high-speed in 2003, I then went and downloaded it all off WinMX or something along those lines. So that was how I saw it, and then eventually I cashed in the following Iacon, because I bought for £10 a Osaka plushie that shook when you pulled a string on it.
I have the same one.
Did you buy? Were you at 2002?
Not Osaka. I have Chiyo.
Oh yeah, there's a Chiyo and a Sakaki as well. I think the Sakaki one had the cat attached to a hand.
I had the Chiyo one, I actually scared a friend of mine one time. A male friend, was staying over, and he was asleep, and then I put it on his head and just like pulled the string, so it started vibrating. And he kept his eyes closed and he said, "Please tell me that's not a vibrator." So, awesome toy.
Yes, yeah, so and then I sold it at Iacon 2003 on the Bring and Buy for £40. So,
what?
£30.
And you sold it?
Yeah, for 40 quid.
To who? Who bought it for 40 quid? Just
Bring and Buy, so somebody. I think another one went in the auction for 35. That was how insane it was in 2003, because people didn't realise you could just buy this stuff off the internet.
Nice.
Yeah, 2003 was the Iacon where I came away with more money than I went with.
Wow.
Along with that, I sold most of my VHS collection at that point, and people were still paying money for VHS tapes. That was probably the last year they did. Yeah, so that's how I saw it there and then. So how do you feel about it now? Now, well, I've rewatched a bit, and I know you haven't, so
I've seen the opening many times. No, I have seen clips and stuff, like briefly, but I haven't actually sat down and watched the whole show again. Feelings about the show then, I remember at the time I was kind of in a drought for actually something good, because I downloaded everything from the internet. It was just like a wasteland of animated shite. And I was very pleasantly surprised by his manga Daio and watched the whole thing in a marathon, I think. So it's kind of a blur of giggling and laughing. And now I still get warm and fuzzy feelings when I think back in those days.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot to begin with, and I think all the way through when I first saw it. Watching it again, trying to watch a load in a row now is hard work, because it is the reason I didn't count. I watched like 14, because it's the first, I think it's like the first three DVDs I watched, and it was like, yeah, all these are good, but they're all much of a muchness. I'm not sure if I'm going to get any more from watching the remaining 13 episodes that I'm going to learn from just watching again now. The only thing that really struck me is how the first couple of segments, because when it first broadcast it in Japan, it was broadcast in like 4-minute clips daily and then all of them together at the end of the week. So it's essentially a bunch of shorts all stuck together into 26 episodes. So it's either 130 episodes or 26, depending on how you're looking at it. And the first two are really rough. Losing my voice there a minute. They're just some really dodgy bits of animation. And I was like, I can't remember it looking this bad. And I was wrong, because it doesn't look that bad. Most of the rest of the series looks pretty good. But for some reason, the first episode looks a bit crappy. There's lots of like poster pose without any in-betweens in. And some weirdly shaped models. Like Chiyo. I know Chiyo, her size fluctuates throughout the series depending on the purpose.
Mood.
Yeah, of the gag. But yeah, she looks like a really off model in those first couple of episodes, like having a gigantic head. But once it got going, it's pretty good. In fact, there's better animation than I remembered later on in the series. Often not in the funny parts, often in the sort of the sentimental, let's just gaze at the sunshine in a nostalgic sort of way, running after dogs. But yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it now. The other thing is the DVDs I watched, which I've bought in, I think I bought the first three volumes in 2004, imported. And then I got the remaining ones on eBay the past year for about £1.99 each. And they really do drive home the decadence of the anime market in the middle 2000s.
Yes.
the ADV ones are like preloaded with anime network advert. What is anime? Anime is this, that, and the other. And then like the ones that got adverts for the US version of New Type, and they all come with like really thick pamphlets with sort of show notes, comments from the production company, production designs. And it's like, yeah, you don't get that nowadays. You get your bare cheap releases, the entire series in £20. But yeah, I mean, these all must have all cost me like £20 each as well. Ridiculous. £60 for half a TV series.
£60?
Yeah.
How much was that in euros? Like 80, 90? Jeez.
Yeah, I don't know.
Too much money, too rich.
Oh, the other thing which struck me from back then was, because the following year, 2003, that was when 4chan started.
Oh, yeah.
And sorry. I think there was a lot of, I mean, I remember it just being full of Azumanga Daioh images,
yes,
and GIFs and memes and, yeah, ridiculous amount of stuff.
Actually, I don't go on 4chan, but a friend of mine convinced me to take a look. See, so my first and only time I've actually been on 4chan, I was welcomed to an X-rated picture of Chiyo with a broom. And that'll stay with me for the rest of my life.
Sorry to bring back that traumatic thought for you.
But yeah, I do remember lots and lots of X-rated Azumanga fan fiction, I guess. I don't know, but still just single images.
That wasn't really what I was thinking of, but like, I was thinking of more like the gifts of Osaka kicking the shoe to foretell the weather and it landing on the truck. And various gifts of Chiyo's dad. I think people used to like have like a ping image with the transparent background, because so you could stick him in various other pictures. But no, that wasn't what I was thinking of. But thank you for bringing. We've covered all aspects of 4chan now between us.
But I see, when I think of Azumanga Daioh and like gifts and pics and stuff like that, it's like the first thing that comes to me is what's her name, the lesbo chick,
Cowrin.
And like I remember there was a t-shirt contest in like AACon, and there was like two winners, and one was like a Jabba the Hutt, you know, action figure one in referencing masturbation, and then the other one was an Azumanga Daioh one referencing playing with cats, but another word for cats.
I thought maybe I just didn't go to the parts of the cock, because I remember those t-shirt competitions from various UK cons in the 90s, but I don't remember them from in the 2000s. But there must have been, if you saw that one as well. Maybe I'll just stop, because I stopped going to opening ceremonies and ending ceremonies. Maybe that's why I'm missing out on these perverted t-shirt competitions they used to have.
I had never been to one, and it was a bit of an eye-opener. I'll probably not go to one again.
On the Know Your Meme website, I looked it up. There's five entries for Azumanga Daioh based memes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Inform.
Let me have a look. Let me see if I can bring up the page. One of them's that shoe kicking one. So there's Osaka shoe kick is one of them, which came out of the You're the Man Now dog fad. It tells me. The first version was uploaded on You're the Man Now Dog called Osaka Stop Throwing Your Damn Shoe. And then they got like various videos and GIFs. Basically the joke tends to be Osaka kicks the shoe, and then rather than landing on the truck it lands somewhere else. So I'm looking at ones here. So one, she's setting off a huge explosion. One, she kicks it and he gets picked up by the Katamari Damacy characters. All sorts of hilarious memes. There's the My Waifu meme, which is from Kimura, the paedophile teacher, describing his showing a photo of his wife and saying My Waifu. And that is then a 4chan meme where various people claim various animated characters as their wife. There's the Kai Pirin Ha dance, which is basically, I'm vaguely familiar with this one. It's kind of like caramel dancing. It was a animated gif of Tomo shaking her finger set to a song called Kai Piranha by German singer Carino in 2005. And then various people...
I was going to say, I think I remember that one until you mentioned who sang it, and I was like, I have no idea.
But basically, people just redraw the Tomo pose with various different characters to that music. Then there's the opening credits is a meme in itself. If you look on Nico Video, there's loads of remakes of the credits with various different characters. I think I've played some of them at my Mad Stravaganza panels. I think the Kaiji one I've done, One Piece, and maybe Italia as well. And then there is also I Wish I Were a Bird, which is apparently from episode 25, where Osaka encounters Chio's dad hovering outside the classroom window. And the cat spoke English to Osaka, saying, "Hello, everyone. How are you? Fine, thank you." Osaka responded with the exclamation that is, "Oh my god." And the cat responds by saying, "I wish I were a bird." I don't know how this is a meme. There does not seem to be many examples of its meme-ness. Yeah, there's a derivative. Osaka versus double Chio's dad. Okay, Osaka, there's the cat waving to the cat's back again, and he's back again. Okay, it's just some dumb remix. Okay, there you go. We're four memes and one which is a stretch.
Well, the only one I actually recall seeing on the interweb is the shoe kicking one. As for the other ones, I dare not venture into 4chan again, so I can't say.
The other thing I want to bring up is next was, what is the influence it's had on the last decade of anime? I would say there's been a lot of shows about schoolgirls doing nothing.
But do you think that's due to Yasumi Daioh, or that's just the way shows were going in general?
I don't. Well, it's produced. Well, I think it's not. It's not. It might be due to that, or it's part of the start of a trend, which is going to happen anyway. Let me just find my post I made about this earlier. In 2010, she was a post I called "In the Midnight Hour." She cried, "Mo, mo, mo." Hilarious puns there from me. But basically, Azumanga Daioh was done by Star Child Records, and there was a slot on Tokyo TV where most of the titles were produced by Star Child, and most of them resemble Azumanga Daioh in some way or another. And a lot of them share the same producer as Azumanga Daioh. So you've got Doki Doki School Hours, which is instead of the tiny student, it has a tiny teacher. There is Pani Pony Dash, which instead of a tiny student has a tiny teacher. There's Gakuen Utopia Manabi Straight, which is Azumanga Daioh in the future, where all 17-year-old girls look about 10.
Oh my God.
There's Minami.
Pedophilia extravaganza.
Because I why did I did watch the first episode of it, and I was like, what? These are supposed to be 17 once it got to that point. In no way are they 17. At least in Azumanga Daioh, they all actually age, and one of them changes a haircut 3 times. So yeah, you got Minami K, which got 3-4 series about a bunch of dull sisters doing nothing. There's Today in Class 5-2, which is another schoolgirls doing, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, there's loads of this stuff. And the other thing, the other, it's not alone, because I think the other big thing was the manga called, let me just find my note, High School Girls. And that the thing that did was it popularized the idea of actually having a woman writing stories about girls for boys, and so can get away with being filthier without being quite so creepy, because it's got the excuse, well, a woman's writing it. Whereas I think it's naturally going to come off a bit creepier when it's a adult man writing stories about schoolgirls.
It's always gonna be creepy regardless. It's for a specific audience. It has to be creepy regardless.
Well, I think the cartoon does a fairly good, Azumanga Daioh does a fairly good job in the cartoon of not being too creepy. There's a few shots here and there I noticed rewatching where you're like, did you really need to sort of scroll all the way up from that character's feet to her head very slowly? Which is like, I don't know if you're an animator and a woman, would you ever do that shot? Would you ever pick to do that shot? Or is that very much like a man's idea of, if it was a
As an
female?
animator, and it came down to thinking about time and production and budget, if you could just have a still image and you had so many seconds to fill, it's like, and it's close to a deadline, it's just throw anything at it. I don't want to draw like 500 drawings. So I can understand. It's a cheap escape.
Yeah, I think they do have the cheap escapes in the series, which aren't quite so creepy though. And but I'll get to that later. So the thing, oh, the school setting, did it ring true to you as just in general,
Well,
as not necessarily of a Japanese school, because obviously we've never experienced that, either of us.
growing up in an Irish convent school, it wasn't that similar. I don't know, like, they're very innocent anyway, but
They
as
are.
it was the first school life, I guess there was a lot of nothing going on, and they made a lot of, hoopla about nothing. That's kind of very school lifey. But they all seem very, I don't know. It's not half as bitchy as school really is it?
No, I think, and also I was wondering whether these are actually the losers at this school.
Because, I would assume so.
Because they do make a point that they have no boyfriends. Because early on, rewatching it, I read Osaka when she first meets, I can't remember who she's talking. I think Tomo and Yomi. She's basically saying, "So you've got no boyfriends then?" And they all sort of sigh in there. And they have, apart from Kagura and Kaorin, they appear to do no extracurricular activities whatsoever. No, well, belong to any clubs.
I think like Osaka is the definition of a loser in school. Although she's lovely, she's just like, there's nothing going on in her head.
Yeah, and then to top it all off, they keep spending their summer holidays hanging around with their spinster teachers.
That's pretty true. So not only are they losers, the teachers are also very questionable also.
That is true. But yeah, that just dawned on me when I was writing the note. Hang on, are these the losers? I mean, some of them are academically on top.
But yeah. Sakaki, I don't think, is a loser. And she's Yomi, very, like the two ones with tits, basically. They seem quite sociable. Well, not sociable, like they could be in a different group if they wanted, but this does seem like a loser group.
Well, yeah, the point in the series often they make is that Yomi can't escape Tomo. Tomo just deliberately, like, she doesn't study at all, but when there was the chance that she wasn't going to get to the same high school as Yomi, it's that apparently she knuckled down and passed the entrance exam so she could continue to dog Yomi for the rest of her life.
Joy. Lucky Yomi. Actually, I did like Tomo. Tomo's my favourite character.
Yeah, she's my favourite character. Well, I don't know, her or Osaka. But I do think they get the funniest bits of the series. Anywhere Tomo's running wild, or I particularly like the bit where she makes Chiyo cry. When she grabs her hair in bunches and pretends to be Chiyo. In fact, any time that any characters crawl to Chiyo is great.
Yeah. I don't know, I know it's like it's for girls and it's TV and kids and happy and stuff, but if they wanted it to make it more interesting, there should be an Ibichi factor, I feel. An arch nemesis, more than a cat. A person, perhaps.
Well, they got a cat and a paedophile teacher. What more? What other enemies do you need?
Well, paedophile teachers may be going a bit far. Somewhere in between a cat and a paedophile teacher, they could have had.
Yeah, it's not. Oh, but you say it's for girls, it's not for girls. It's for boys.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I liked it. I like boys.
Oh, it definitely has crossover appeal because I think the comic it goes out of its way not to be too, I mean, there's pin-up shots of Sakaki later on in the comic where you're like, okay, yeah. I see what you're doing there. Actually, I've got a picture from another post I wrote on my website. I'll just link it to you in a second.
I think I have like an anime buffer where I just like intentionally ignore all that. You just have to develop it as a woman, I think, watching anime.
Yeah, so those are pictures from two different. The first one's drawn by a man, and the second one's drawn by a woman.
Well, yeah, I prefer the woman drawing.
And the one by the woman is from a manga which is far more sexually explicit than as a manga diet in terms of its jokes. But yeah, in terms of the actual drawings, it's not.
Yeah, it's okay to joke about being dirty, but when you actually draw it in, like, in your face, sexual position, it's, you know, it's like, yeah, no.
Yeah. But yeah. I think, there's not much of that in the anime. And I think the only times it does, it sort of draws attention to it in a comedic way. Because I think one where Yukari puts on a bikini and says, now you're going to get double fan service. I think that's the only thing which I remember from the first 13 episodes. Well, I still want to discuss on this podcast. So school settings in anime. So if this one's not realistic, what's any come spring to mind that you find?
School setting in anime.
Yes.
I can't actually think of many school set animes off the top of my head. The last one that I saw Like, the only ones that come to my head are, like, FOMO Panic, where it's like, that's not very realistic, or I ran a high school host club, which is the biggest waste of time. Also, ridiculously unrealistic, or Evangelion, also unrealistic.
I think in general that is. That. So maybe this is more realistic than your general, typical. I mean, because the thing which I came into anime with, which was really Urusei Yatsura, and that's kind of unrealistic because it's got aliens and gods and things wandering around every episode. But in terms of sort of the cruelty of people in school, I think that captures it much more better than Azumanga. Everyone's lovely and nice generally, apart from
Harry Kano, His and Her Circumstances. I watched that. That was kind of okay actually, because there was bullying and such going on. So
yeah, I think you're right there. I think maybe you have to look to shoujo anime and manga probably to get a more realistic view. I know they tried to do a similar thing with male characters recently called Daily Lives of High School Boys.
Sorry. I can imagine. I don't know if I want to watch.
I didn't find it very funny. I was told by people that it was hilarious, and then I watched it and I was like, no, that's not funny. And then they all eventually agreed with me. Because sometimes you start a show and you're like, yeah, this is the greatest thing ever, and then four episodes in, when the budget's run out or they're in a rush, it suddenly becomes, yes, not so good. Used all the best material to begin with.
So was the first four episodes good?
Oh, I only watched the first third of the first episode I liked of this show. And then, which was the most unrepresentative part of the show, which it wasn't really anything to do with the daily lives of high school boys. It was sort of a flight of fantasy.
short high school boys' daily lives is boring.
Thumbs down here. Yeah.
Thumbs down.
Okay. Yeah, I only like shows about funny animals nowadays.
Funny animals.
Yeah. The things I'm watching are Polar Bear Cafe, Poyo Poyo, which is 5 minutes long. No, it's not even that. It's about 3 minutes long. Bottom Biting Bug, that is 5 minutes long.
Bottom Biting Bug.
I knew that was coming next. It's a children's show about a bug which bites people's bottoms.
Is this an animation?
It is, yes. It's a spin-off of a popular music video from about 5 years ago. And
what's the general plot? Is the same in every episode, or is there a story arc?
There's not a story arc, but it's about a 10-year-old bottom biting bug who goes to bottom biting school, so he can learn how to bite people's bottoms, so he can inherit the family bottom biting business.
Really?
Yep.
It sounds amazing.
This morning's
is
episode.
Everything shaped like a butt in the design.
Oh no, because apparently, having your bottom bit by a professional bottom biting bug really gives your life some zip and pep. And
so it's a good thing they're doing.
It is, yeah. That's why there's a shop. So people go. So in the first episode, there's a politician who's suffering in the ratings, and he gets his bottom bit and shoots right up in the ratings again. There's a baseball player.
Starts with the business and everything.
Yeah, but as a baseball player, he's lost his form. That's sorted by having his bottom bit.
You get to watch them bite bottoms.
They do, and there's a song which goes. The song from the music video tends to play when that happens.
Is it graphic?
No, because it's very cartoony. It's for children.
This could give children some weird behaviors if they watch this enough. You know, like what are you doing? It's like, I'm just doing the bottom biting. Like what?
It's very educational because the latest episode was about the dirty bottom biter, dirty bottom biter Blackie was called, which they were warning because there was a news item.
Slightly racist bottom biter.
There's a news item warning people about this dirty bottom biter. So protect your bottom if you're near the dirty bottom biter. And apparently that, which brought people down when you were bitten on the bottom by a dirty bottom biter, as opposed to a normal bottom biting bug. I'm just seeing how many times I can say the word bottom biting.
You're actually doing amazingly well.
It's not too much of a tongue twister. And then they eventually learn that the reason it brings you down is because he's biting you with dirty teeth, because he doesn't brush his teeth. And then it played a new song teaching you to brush your teeth. I'm 37 years old.
Do you know the song? Do you hum it to yourself as you brush your teeth?
I've only heard it once, because it was only on this morning, so I have to watch it a few times before I can get it. there's one other thing which I'm watching, which is also 2 minutes long, which is called TQ, which actually is kind of an Azumanga-Daioh thing. It's four girls doing nothing. Lesbianism is hilarious type jokes in there as well. And it runs 2 minutes, and there's like no breath between jokes. It's the most rapid-fire thing you've ever seen. And some really...
2 minutes of rapid-fire jokes. Sounds good.
It's by I think it's one of the first things MAPPA have done, the production company, which the guy who left Madhouse set up. So there's lots of fun drawings and stuff. There's not much, sometimes there's not much in the way of animation, but the drawings are pretty funny. That ties into what I was wanting to talk about next, which is gag anime, because that is pretty much all I watch nowadays. I just want jokes.
Just give me the jokes.
Yeah. As in short amount of time as possible, so I can get one with the rest of my life.
Couldn't be bothered with your stupid story. You just tell me the same story over and over again anyway.
Exactly. Narrative is overrated. Thumbs down.
I don't know. Like, I haven't seen... Well, I haven't watched anime in forever, but I just remember not being interested in any story. Or, like, character development is just being a bit out the window, so I guess this is the last refuge, because... Yeah, I don't know. I'm just ranting.
And then we got some talking points from Twitter. I went to the internet and got people to give us some more things to talk about. And Aaron Long, who will be on this podcast next week, asked me about how the show used music. Now, I mentioned this before. I think this is some of the best use of music. It's not quite as good as I remember, but it's still pretty good. Let me find my note. I went on it. It's all done by the Curicorda Pops Orchestra, all the soundtrack actually within the show. And they're now, I think, the Curicorda Quartet. They just did music for a show called Suritama, which is a sci-fi show about fishing. And that's worth checking out as well, Grace.
I don't. I'm sorry.
It'll both make you hungry and consider taking up fishing. Because it's got lots
I hate
of...
those shows about food. They're the worst.
We're really good drawings of food better than any food could actually look in real life. And you're like, nah.
Yes.
One thing I love about the music in Azumanga-Daioh is you can't mistake it for anything else. You hear it and you go, that's Azumanga-Daioh music, which I think is the sign of good anime music. That's why I like a lot of the early Urusei Yatsura music, because you can't... So later stuff, not so good, but the early stuff, you know, oh, that music is coming on, so that means we're going to get a chase, or something along those lines. And also, as we mentioned before, they've got these scrolling up shots to save time and money. It also lets the music do some of the lifting on long still shots. So you hit a punchline and... or leading up to a punchline, you'll get a still shot, and you think, if you haven't got the sound on, you think, what the hell are they doing? But because you've got the beat of the joke, it kind of works like the equivalent of having a silent panel in a comic strip. And the final thing I think they do quite well, not all the time, but sometimes they'll use the final note or chord to punctuate the punchline of a particular gag. And because they change the music between, like, a bit, so there might be a bit. So this is Tomo putting a chair under Chio's head because she's dozing off. And then once that joke's played out, then it'll switch to a different piece of music. And then you know, okay, that bit's over, we're moving on to something else. Which I think breaks it up in the way that, say, these four-panel strips they actually were. It keeps those broken up. Because I think it keeps the rhythm of comedy. Which is a problem I have a lot of these sort of more recent gag shows in the Azumanga-Daioh vein, is they sort of take the panels of the four-panel strips and sort of stretch them out, chop them up, move them around to try and make them into an anime, but then that breaks all the humor, all the rhythm of the gags up. So you've got you may have a really nice looking anime, but it's no longer funny.
The pacing is off.
Yeah. K-On, I am thinking of you. Anything you want to add to that, Grace? Or?
Well, I think you said everything intelligently, so I don't want to fuck it up.
Okay.
But yeah, so I'm just short. Anyway, music is good. Segments, well, like you said, done.
Yeah, the Kurikorda Quartet, I think, have been over to the UK a few times because Ian Lee, the guy who used to present the 11 o'clock show, Bargain Basement Chris Morris from the 90s. He's brought them over for his radio program on a London radio station whose name I've completely forgotten. But yeah, he's a big fan, so he's brought them over a few times. And I've missed them every single time, as I tend to do with the Japanese bands I like. I always discover they've played in London like 3 months after they actually played. I'm like,
Worst feeling ever.
Yeah, it's the problem of liking bands nobody else does. Or at least nobody else around me does. Then we have from Battle, Greg Driver, who was on the last podcast. He's given us three questions of varying quality. His first one is, if you had to pick one girl to be a furry version of in a Dragon Ball Z Azumanga Daioh fanfic, who would it be? Grace, any selection for this perverted, disgusting question he's asked us?
To be honest, I'm not really 100% sure what the question is asking. If you had to pick one girl to be a furry version of Inei.
So he's going to write a Dragon Ball Z Azumanga Daioh fanfic by the sounds of things. And he wants to put a character from Azumanga Daioh in the story, but as a furry version of themselves.
So it's not to replace an existing DBZ character?
Possibly, but I'm not sure that matters.
Who would I probably? I'm just gonna say Sakaki she is the most athletic, and that seems to be all that matters in DBZ.
And she's the one with the most furry tendencies already in the.
Yes, true.
Yeah, that's who I put as well. I put Sakaki, of course. I do not want to read this fanfic though, Greg.
I would like to get a summary. Just the highlights. And then the detail.
He then came at us with, which of the girls would you least like to see as a giant terrorizing Tokyo? I've gone for Tomo. Because she
Why Tomo?
Well, because in the actual show, she terrorizes the school. I'm thinking particularly the first... what's it called? The first... when they have the open day cafe thing going on, and they decide to have a plush toy cafe, and they make a giant cat suit, and she goes, no, you're doing that wrong, and then she just puts the cat suit on and then just runs around the school screaming and comes back.
But that sounds like exactly what the kind of energy and attitude that you would want in a giant terrorizing Tokyo.
But
I mean
what a giant terrorizing Tokyo.
But if you were to pick someone to do a good job, Tomo would definitely do the best job of terrorizing Tokyo. So my answer would be Osaka, because she would by far do the worst job of terrorizing Tokyo and probably end up killing herself. Like just vanishing into the sea and drowning, and that would be it. You'd have a floating dead body in Tokyo Bay. A giant one.
And apparently on a serious note, he says, using the star rating 1 to 5, making us do a lot of work here. How would you rate each of the Gale's characters and why? Right. Okay, let's start with Osaka. I'll give her 5 out of 5 because I find her a hilarious character. I just like the sort of weird jumps in logic she makes. The fact that occasionally she can't seem to tell the difference between dream and reality. Just like some of the punchlines you get. It's like the first summer holiday one where she's talking with Sakaki about how various words look differently when they're written on the page, and then they sort of get into talking about, so it starts with hemorrhoids and then they start talking about sea lions and dolphins, and then one of the other characters comes up and says, what are you two talking about? And she goes, well, we're talking about hemorrhoids. And then Sakaki looks absolutely distressed that what she thought was a cute talk about riding on the back of a dolphin has been completely mislabeled by Osaka jumping right back to the start.
For me, I would give Osaka 3 out of 5 because, well, she does have a lot of good jokes and punchlines. She's just so slow and dreamy and ditzy. It's frustrating. It's like you just want to shake her. But that's her character. She does it well, but just that personality type. If you happen to be a person that is similar to Osaka, I will also give you 3 out of 5.
Oh, actually, yeah, of the six, I would say I only ever knew one person. I knew one person who was like Osaka, and I don't think I've known anybody like any of the other characters. And that might sound odd because people think Osaka's the strangest one, but I did know someone who was as spaced out as she was.
Oh, really?
Yes. Tomo, what do you give her out of 5?
5 out of 5. Tomo's my favorite. she has the best jokes, I think. And she's just, I don't know. She's just the funniest one and lively and, like, clear character, does what she says on the tin, basically. So, that's it.
Yeah, 5 out of 5 for me as well. I like the fact that, like, the first 2 years, she wants to be Fujiko out of Lupin the Third. So. and then when she stops wanting to be that, then she still has a Lupin-themed ambition. She wants to join Interpol, doesn't she? So basically wants to be Zenigata from Lupin the Third after that. And just her entire energy compared to actually ability is, I think, makes for a lot of jokes. It's like, she's so eager to be the best at everything, despite having no ability or anything whatsoever. Just all energy. Next, Chiyo. I put 4 out of 5, and I might go for 3 out of 5, because I think the voice annoyed me more than I remembered.
So strictly for voice, she lost the point.
She did, because I like some of the jokes, but more as a sort of a straight man type character or the victim type character of either Tomo in reality, sometimes Osaka in reality, like when she tries to surprise Chiyo by dropping a firework behind her, but also sort of the relationship Chiyo has with Osaka in Osaka's mind, like when she thinks that Chiyo might become the president of America and America would be full of tiny little Chiyos, and the idea that her bunches are controlling her and can be removed and then can be attached to your head in order to fly. But generally, those dream episodes are some of my favourites. Okay, how much for Chiyo for you?
For me, Chiyo, I don't know, like, she's the glue, but as a single focal point, I would probably also give her 3 out of 5. I don't know, like, she's, like, cute and stuff, but it's not, like, too funny. It's like the jokes are more happening around her, I find, or to her, than she's contributing. She's just being funny at.
Yeah, and she gets more of the sort of long sentimental sequences with no jokes in as well.
Yeah, boring. Hurry up.
Okay, next is Sakaki.
Sakaki. I would give Sakaki 5 out of 5. She's my second favorite because I like her and the cat thing. It's funny. And yeah, that's it.
I got 4 out of 5 for similar reasons, but I knocked a point off because she's often the other main culprit for the sentimental sequences. Like, I want a cat. I can't have a cat. Also,
For some reason, I relate to that more than Chiyo's sentimental. Chiyo's dad as well. It's like, what's going on there?
He's the best character. In fact, rewatching it this week and the endings credits, that creeped me out the first time I saw it again this week, where they're all sort of flying in the sky, and then he's there, just turns around and waves to the audience as if this all makes sense to me. How about you? But yeah, Chiyo's dad's great. And the chief... And also, Sakaki does suffer a bit the same as Osaka, is that she does actually think that is Chiyo's dad. She can't quite disassemble the dream from the real world. But the image is there before he turns up, so obviously they've just seen this character that's available for sale, and it's somehow stuck in their brain as Chio's dad. But it's odd that Osaka and Sakaki both think that. But
yes, I don't know. I'm shaking my head right now. You can't hear that.
I can see it, though. the audience can't. Grace is shaking her head. Yes, so 4 out of 5 for Sakaki for me. Yomi. I'm going to give her... I'm trying to think. Unfortunately, I didn't get most of the good stuff from her, which is all sort of later in the series, I think. So I'll give 3 out of 5, but maybe move up to 4 out of 5 if I rewatch the later stuff. Because there's the stuff about her being ill later on that I didn't get to see when they go to the amusement park. And lots of her dieting stuff later on.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to give 4 out of 5 because the other characters are so wacky and out there. You just need somebody stable to hold everything together and, you know, someone relatable somewhat. And she does that role pretty well. So 4 out of 5 for being not ditzy or zany or out there. Just being solid, solid character.
And Kagura. The final one of the 6 main. Unless you want to do also Mark Cowering. Do you remember Mark Cowering? I haven't given Cowering a mark.
I don't know.
What? Don't know what's going on. Kagura, the sporty one who comes in later in the series.
Kagura. Oh yeah, Cowering. I don't want to give her a mark. She's not really. She's like a support.
Yes, she starts off main and then moves to support. Cowering does, but Kagura sort of eventually moves to the main characters.
I don't know. You go first.
I'll give them 4 out of 5, but I can't remember why. I should maybe have written that down as well. I think as the third part of the Tomo, Osaka, Kagura triangle that sort of forms in the second year. Because it sort of... And then also her insistence of trying to become Sakaki's friend, whether Sakaki likes it or not.
Mm.
And there's the sequence where she's trying to scare all the cats off by just running at them and going, rah! For repeated attempts, which sort of becomes funny through repetition. But yeah, maybe I didn't get enough to see. Maybe I didn't see enough of her in the episodes I watched to properly form an opinion. So I don't know what you're going to do. You didn't watch any.
Yeah. From what I remember, there's not much to remember from her. I can't really remember too much.
Well, she's got a haircut.
She got a haircut.
No,
she's got a face.
She's got a face. She's got tan lines.
I just remember her like trying to like being friends, chasing around Sakaki. That's it.
Yeah.
So I like Sakaki. She likes Sakaki. 4 out of 5.
Okay, and from Niall Flanagan at Nicholas Cage on Twitter, which of the girls do you relate to the most? I'll let you first, being a girl.
Physically, Chio, because I'm also tiny, but I would probably say Sakaki. I'm not lesbian though.
Sakaki's not the lesbian. It's Kaorin's the lesbian.
Okay. I'm...
Unless you're reading more into it than I am.
T-shirts. That's all. The only thing I remember. Oh, yes, yes. She's the affectionate of being lesbian. Sakaki, she's, like, really cold and distant and then looking for affection where that's not coming from the evil cat. That's kind of like me, except that I'm not tall. Or that's cool. Anyway, your turn.
Okay, well, I would say Atapush Yomi, because I wear glasses. And I probably, in general, tend to be the sensible one out of any group. But yeah,
that's true.
But when I was at school, I was in doing theatre type stuff, and like I said, there's nobody really is in any clubs apart from Cowrin and Kagera, and even then that's astronomy and sports clubs, so there you go. Also,
so,
I'm not a girl.
For you, I probably would have picked Yomi too. Like, for me, well, who would you have picked?
I'd have picked Yukari, but she's not one of the girls. But, just particularly because one of the last episodes I watched was, what's her name? The other teacher, Niamo, having to escort a very drunken Yukari through the streets.
Okay, I can see the comparison. That's fair.
Yeah, and does any of the other characters ring true to anyone you knew at school?
Not really. Like, Irish people are far more bitchy and less kind than these ones. None of these.
Okay. Let's move on to the question from... well, yeah, I did mention that there was a girl who Osaka reminded me of. But beyond that, no. Again, because it's more theatre types that would come to ask. Because we were an all-boys school. It was only in the sixth form that we'd get female students coming in. And then they tended to come in because they were interested in doing the theatre stuff we were doing. Is Azumanga Daioh Mo or not? From Bradley C. Meek.
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, I always generally find that trying to pinpoint what is Mo or not is trying to figure out what emo is. And it's hard because the goals keep on moving around. It's like, what wasn't emo when it came out can suddenly be classed as emo later on, and vice versa. However, Azumanga Daioh ran in the magazine Dengeki Daioh, so of course it's Mo.
Which, really?
Yeah.
But it's a... I don't know. Like, it's a gag thing and it's happy, so it's not really Mo, is it?
And I think we discussed the pin-up shots and yeah.
I just tried to gloss over that.
And would it benefit from a remake, also from Bradley C. Meek? I'm going to say
What do you think?
I don't think it would. I think you've either got to stretch it out and chop it up like a lot of the K-On! Is done, like, in which case you lose all the jokes, and the jokes is the main thing that's got going for it. Or you do it as shorts, and that's already been done. There's a book. He did a bunch of new strips for the 10th anniversary, so I suppose you could do an OAV of those strips. Some of those are really funny. Some of them are like, where's the joke? But yeah, there's one where Tomo decides to wear a giraffe mask in order to make herself taller. There's a series of strips which is quite funny like that. And then there's ones where Osaka finally can just straight out asks Kaorin if she's a lesbian. Well, she asks Kaorin if she's gay, and then at least call me a lesbian. Not that I have a lesbian. But yeah, I'm not sure you really need to do any more than what's been done with it. How about you? How do you feel?
In short, no, I don't think so. Like, what's already there, remaking it, like, now, currently, with better animation, it's not really going to add anything to it. So, I don't know, sequel with new content, maybe, but remake the same thing, why bother?
Would you want to see them as adults, all grown up 10 years on?
Well, they wouldn't be. I hope they wouldn't be the same cheery people as adults, because that would just be disgusting. probably not. Well, they couldn't, like, if you liked Azumanga Daioh, you would like the whole mood that it had, and you couldn't really carry down that mood as adults, I don't think, and have it be somewhat realistic. And what would be the circumstance where they would all be together, like they all work in the same office?
Well, probably not, because they were going to do for different things, weren't they? Sakaki wanted to be a vet. Osaka wanted to be a teacher, I seem to remember. Tomo obviously wanted to join Interpol. I can't remember what the other characters wanted to do. Oh, Chia was going to go to America to study, wasn't she?
I can't remember what Yomi and Kagura were going to do, if it was ever brought up. Because obviously Tomo's Interpol is just probably a fantasy.
Yeah, so Tomo in a part-time job on social assistance, and they all have no boyfriends and complaining and all that kind of thing. I don't know. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, you kind of get enough of that from the two teachers anyway in some of the episodes. Okay, I have a few more things I wanted to mention here. Do you remember the live-action Azumanga hoax?
No.
There was some images, I think, probably from one of the Japanese image boards of, like, there's going to be a live-action Azumanga. It kind of did spread more than you'd expect nowadays on the internet. People get excited, go, oh, they're going to make a live-action of it. When it was just a picture somebody had mocked up. It was Azumanga Puzzle Bobble game. I seem to remember.
Puzzle Bobble.
Yeah, Puzzle Bobble worked with the Azumanga girls.
It's your faces.
No, it was like them controlling the little bubble shooter rather than the little dragons. I think that was it. The other thing I remember is at the time, I did look this up on Google Groups, and yeah, pretty much straight away, people going, it's like the anime version of Seinfeld. That used to be a popular way to sell people on it. And it's like, have you ever seen Seinfeld?
Yeah, in the way that it's on TV, I guess.
I think they were just going for the idea that it's a show where nothing of any consequence happens. But yeah, it's more... the thing I compare it to is... I don't know if you ever saw the Charlie Brown and Snoopy show, which was the TV Peanuts show where they adapted Peanuts strips.
I've seen the odd cartoon of Charlie Brown, but I don't know specifically.
Yeah,
cartoons were not much goes on.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got, like, the other thing which I compare it to is because they've got, in the Peanuts cartoons, they always uses, like, the Vince Guaraldi trio. So it's the music's very identifiable, and they use the music to sort of pad stuff out in the same way they do on Azumanga. We don't need to do that in live-action Seinfeld, because you can actually just tell the actors to move. You're not having to pay them anymore. It's like, sorry, Michael Richards, don't fall through the door this time, because it's going to cost us too much money.
But I think stand there while we slowly pad off you, because you're quite tall. It should last a while.
Okay, anything else you want to bring up before we wrap up the show?
Azumanga Daioh was good in the past, but probably won't watch again. Sorry.
I say, yeah, I think you're okay to watch it again. I enjoyed it 10 years on. So do it. Except, of course, I don't think it's in print anymore, so you might find it trouble buying it or anything. The comic is, though.
YouTube, it's fine.
YouTube it, okay. Anything you want to plug, Grace? YouTube, Vimeo, blogs, Twitter?
Not really. I would like to plug Google. It has helped me out a lot this year for searching things better than Yahoo.
What about Bing? Fan of Bing?
Bing? How's Bing?
That's Microsoft search.
Rubbish.
Okay. Bing is not approved by this podcast.
Do you use Bing?
I don't, no.
Do you know anyone that does?
No. Had to think about it, but I'm pretty sure. Okay, as always, you can find this podcast at dynamiteinthebrain.com, at facebook.com/dynamiteinthebrain. So why not? And also you can subscribe on iTunes. That's the bit I meant to say before I ran into the next bit of spiel. So why not write us a review on there and subscribe so more people can find out about the wonder that is this podcast. And you can find me on my personal blog, awesome-engine.com, and on Twitter at awesome_engine. Join us next week for Lupin the Third, First Contact with Aaron Long, and Anthony will be back, hopefully, not playing more video games. Cheerio!
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
strong arms are not as good as real arms.